that it is established that enlightenment is achievable.
다디기 정주되니 그러지 모두와.
Thus, through this, one develops a mind aspiring toward the enlightenment of a Buddha.
다한테 대소대 정주되니 그러지 장구야.
Now, the main aspect of this is to train in developing an awareness that's seeking, aspiring to bringing about others' welfare.
다들이한테 대 수다 수시 경지철. 너가 레지 친원 담배담 당신 짜지 타가 부수수 머리 민배 마신 끈이 팁 몸이 씹을 깨신 깨와로 동네선지 균세 매바 난 내금 된들 겨배 만남지 명주 삼네 내 가사 쌤셔 깨버린 저 생애다 디
This is set forth in the next two stanzas of the technique for doing this where it says all ordinary beings are carried by the continuum of the four powerful currents are tied with the tight bonds of actions difficult to oppose have entered into the iron cage of apprehending inherent existence, are completely beclouded with the thick darkness of ignorance, are born into cyclic existence limitlessly, and in their births are tortured ceaselessly by the three sufferings. Thinking thus of the condition of mothers who have come to such a state, generate the supreme altruistic intention to become enlightened.
Oh, yeah. That, Taiyebe Simje, that the social trouble Simje law,
Any sentient being, or each and every sentient being, all sentient beings from bugs on up, no matter who it is, oneself, others, and so forth, each wants happiness and does not want suffering.
대단하여, 아니, 타협의 심지, 그다음 망구지, 그다음 레드 영업의 샹왕도 손이 뒤이겐배, 다 씹어서 문제리야, 아니 둥이집에, 그다음에 냠탄이 여대배, 다 능주디,
Still, a limitless number of sentient beings are bound in the sufferings of cyclic existence due to contaminated actions and afflictions, and this is what we are to reflect on. How is it that sentient beings come to be in such a state? In the first line, it speaks of the four powerful currents. There are many different modes of interpreting this. In any case here, there are the four powerful currents in terms of the effects, that is to say, birth, aging, sickness, and death.
That's why, yeah. That the digit yonya di karishi or slumna, leg toning we are is, condrujig less than any toning we are is.
And then what causes this? This is indicated in the next line that this is brought about, the four powerful currents are brought about by the tight bonds of actions, are brought about by karma.
Just one. The digit less than inside the karim we are slumna, but any chadang wang we are, chadang yonya gazawa the kawatu slumna, jikta hengi we are is.
And the engaging in good and bad actions, what is that brought about by? That's indicated in the next line. Well, it is brought about by desire and hatred, which are themselves brought about by the conception of oneself as inherently existent, this being called the false view of the transitory as real I. And how does this misconception of the nature of oneself come about? That's indicated in the next line, the thick darkness of ignorance, which is the a consciousness conceiving that other phenomena, one's mental and physical aggregates, inherently exist. That acts as the basis of the conception that oneself inherently exists.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Tedabu kone. Any? Mumebe sibandila, tamebe, tayebe sibandila, betungi humor.
It is through such a process of causation that beings are born into cyclic existence limitlessly and suffer in their births. Thus, when one thinks about this process of causation with regard to other people, one generates compassion. When one thinks about it with respect to oneself, one generates a wish to get out of cyclic existence.
다 되네. 나랑도 넘겨야 한다. chanchu sem chongya liya ane nanga junde dume thane lo chanya chi da dashim je kono lo chanya chi ni sung gyu are da jin nam gyu chanle liya din ja lo da ne nyam le chana ne ba chim bu are.
Now usually when the altruistic intention to become enlightened is cultivated in meditation, it is done by way of two streams of teaching, one being the sevenfold cause and effect quintessential instructions, and the other being the equalizing and switching of self and other. When these two streams of instruction are put together, the meditation is particularly powerful. What is then this combined way of doing these practices? The first step is to develop equanimity. For this meditation, you can imagine three different sentient beings in front of you, friend, an enemy, and a neutral person, and then purposely, intentionally generate the usual sort of desire, hatred, and sense of neglect that you have for them. Then think about why you have desire for one, why you desire the friend, why you hate the enemy, why you neglect the neutral person. The reason that will appear to your mind in time will be that it's because the friend helps and the enemy harms. But then, even in this lifetime, someone who's a friend in the earlier part of one's lifetime can easily become an enemy in the later part of the lifetime, and vice versa. And never mind that, over the course of meaningless continuum of lifetimes, there is no definiteness with regard to beings being having been just friends or just enemies. There's no definiteness. It is by way of this, then, that one accomplishes the first step, the development of equanimity. Then the next step is to recognize all beings as the best of one's friends. This is to individually recognize beings as having been one's best of friends, one's mother, best friend, whatever, over the course of lifetimes, as having been extremely close to oneself. Then with regard to the modes of birth, there are said to be four types: birth from a womb, birth from an egg, birth from heat and moisture, and instantaneous birth. And for birth from the womb or birth from an egg, it's necessary to have a mother, right? Then since one's births in cyclic existence are beginningless, there's no limit to them, thus it's necessary that one, it has been necessary, I don't know, anyway, it has been necessary for one to have had a limitless number of mothers.
That ते छेबा तो माशेबा चेना पैसे छेबा थान्या युद्ध वजह सामु तांगु यारे सामु दोस जाना जान थोड़ो आ
Then reflect on the three beings that you've imagined in front of you, realizing or thinking, reflecting that the neutral being and the enemy over the course of lifetimes have acted as one's own mother, as one's best of friend, and have been extremely close to oneself. At least it is more likely that over the course of lifetimes the person has been in such a close friendly relationship. Then the next step, the third step, is to develop mindfulness of their kindness. For this, imagine your mother of this lifetime in front of you and reflect on how, as a little child, as a little baby and as a little child, she took care of you with such great care and kindness, sustained you. And then extend this to everyone else. Then the fourth step is to develop special mindfulness of kindness. This is to reflect that sentient beings have been kind to one, not only when they were one's friends, but also when they were that they are just persons who, either directly or indirectly, were and are extremely kind to oneself, helped
oneself.
For instance, in our ordinary state, no matter what things we're using to sustain our life, food, clothing, shelter, and so forth, these come to us by way of the kindness of other sentient beings. Now, also, it's important to accumulate merit. And the accumulation of merit is done in relation to other sentient beings, the strongest form of this being when one helps other sentient beings. Thus, it is in dependence upon other sentient beings that we accumulate great good merit. Without other sentient beings, it would be impossible to accumulate great good merit. For instance, with regard to giving, giving must be done to someone else. And the ethics, which is a refraining from harming others, must be done in relation to other sentient beings. And the ethics of restraining self-centeredness has to be done within...
And
this training one pointedly in having an altruistic attitude single-mindedly with respect to others must be done in relation to, in dependence upon, other sentient beings. There's no need to say that other sentient beings are needed for the practice of patience. Of course they are. Thus, in this way, especially, enemies provide a great service for us. In Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, this is explained very beautifully. So, I won't explain it here in detail.
Sabasya
Now also the effort of bodhisattvas comes by way of their taking cognizance of the limitless types of suffering of limitless sentient beings. Thus it is on the basis of other sentient beings that they come to have their great effort. Also, a bodhisattva's concentration and wisdom are similarly conjoined with a concern for others, with an altruistic attitude. The fact that the wisdom consciousness becomes, concentration and wisdom becomes so powerful is due to the fact that these are conjoined with the force of one-pointed altruism toward other beings. Now, hearers and solitary realizers of the low vehicle, the superiors of the low vehicle, have a marvelous meditative stabilization, which is a union of calm abiding and special insight. However, through that union of calm abiding and special insight, they can only achieve liberation from cyclic existence. What is the reason for this? The reason is that that wisdom consciousness is not enhanced with the factors of altruism, of one-pointed dedication to the welfare of others. Thus, sentient beings, other sentient beings, are extremely kind, extremely valuable. Without other sentient beings as one's objects of observation, it would be impossible to engage in such powerful forms of virtue. But then if someone objects, well, these other beings don't necessarily have any motivation to help, thus there isn't any real reason for developing a sense of their kindness. However, if that were the case, then since true cessations and true paths don't have any motivation for helping oneself, then this is the doctrine jewel, then it would be unsuitable to cherish them, value them, and make offerings to the
doctrine.
Therefore, whether the other party has a motivation or not, it doesn't make any difference. If it helps oneself, then that being or thing is to be valued, is very kind, and that kindness, one should be mindful of that kindness. So then an objection is raised in Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Well, that might be the case, but an enemy for sure doesn't have, never mind not having a motivation to help, definitely has a motivation to harm. So how could one think on the kindness of enemies? And Shantideva answers that because that person has harmful intent toward oneself, that person gets the name of an enemy. And because of having the name of an enemy, that person becomes someone to whom one can cultivate patience. Thus, because the enemy helps oneself, provides a great service to oneself, the enemy is greatly kind. So that's the development of special mindfulness of kindness, the fourth step. Thus, if these sentient beings are helpful to oneself, even when they are enemies, then what need is there to say that they are helpful, that they are kind? That's it. If they are kind, if even enemies are kind when they are seeking to bring about harm, then what need is there to say about friends who are helping oneself? Then the fifth step is to develop an intention to repay that kindness. Now, it is the a better mode of behavior to repay kindness that one has given to oneself, to provide something back in turn for that kindness. Then the next step is to equalize self and other. This is the realization that both oneself and others equally want happiness and don't want suffering. Within the context that both self and other are equal in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, what is the difference? Oneself is only one, whereas others are of infinite number, great number. Thus, for somebody who has any smarts, the greater number is more important than the smaller number. Thus, it would be really unsuitable and stupid for oneself to use others for one's own purpose, and it is most suitable, most correct, to use oneself for others' welfare.
And then
the next is to reflect on the disadvantages of cherishing yourself. Now, the state of ruination that we're in is due to the fact that the conception of inherent existence of ourselves and a self-cherishing work together, the one influencing the other. It is through this that we've come into the ruined state that we're in. If there isn't anyone who doesn't consider himself or herself to be important, we need to consider, reflect on the type of state that this sort of self-cherishing and self-centeredness, self-importance has led us into. What a mess it's brought us into. If from beginningless cyclic existence until now we've engaged in self-cherishing and it's brought us into such a mess, isn't it then a terrible mistake to continue doing self-cherishing? Wouldn't it be better to do something else? If one cherishes others, however, one achieves limitless merit, great merit, through the power of which one can achieve tremendous good effects. Now, as Shantideva says, Gautama Buddha and ourselves in the past were equal in being ordinary sentient beings.
다대 뒤줄라 나란소 동행이 상황도 더 되게 지다 거다마부터 아니 간다지 견근세 연된 근된게 간다지 강사 쳐봐야지 쳐줘야 돼 가래 충분해서 나나
And then if you look into the reasons why we in our present state are caught in the mess that we're in and Gautama Buddha has become a special person endowed with all good qualities and having gotten rid of all faults. And the reason one finds is that Gautama Buddha gave up self-cherishing and assumed the cherishing of others and thereby proceeded to such a high state, whereas we do the opposite. We neglect others' welfare and are seeking after only our own welfare, thereby drawing us into all sorts of afflictive emotions, thereby drawing us into cyclic existence. Thus, when one in this way reflects on the disadvantages of self-cherishing and the advantages of cherishing others, one proceeds to the next step of the actual thought of switching self and other. The name switching self and other is given to the process of switching one's own the attitude of cherishing oneself into an attitude of cherishing others and the attitude of neglecting others into an attitude of neglecting oneself. This is called the switching of self and other. Then the next step, the tenth step, is to take others' suffering within emphasizing compassion. When one thinks again and again on the suffering situation of these other sentient beings, these dear sentient beings who are so close to oneself, one naturally develops a wish to relieve those beings of their suffering and draw it into oneself. To relieve them of their suffering and the causes of their suffering. It's helpful at this point to imagine all of the sufferings and causes of suffering of other sentient beings and that these are drawn into oneself in the form of poison, weapons, or beings of whom one is particularly afraid, to draw them into oneself and absorb them down into the very basis of one's life. The next step is to reflect on these sentient beings who want happiness but are bereft of happiness and through being moved by that situation to give, to develop an attitude of giving to other sentient beings one's own happiness and causes of happiness in the form of physical happiness, in the form of resources, in the form of roots of virtue that will bring happiness, that will bring happiness.
This one.
And what one is doing is imagining that one is giving to other sentient beings one's own
body,
one's own good body, resources, and roots of virtue.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That digalo ya visualize mi bache na ju da. Da ji ni. Da khada jun ju ngwa le na le so ban na shin ji mar men da la mar me. Da be ka so be sa wan de ba la sa wa. Da kyon ban de ba la kyon ba shin wa den de ge ka da kang da kang de ba te da te na ba chen do rang ge ge wa za wa da. Ji da rang ge ji da ka da ni ge sa ro ka ri yo di de wa. Jin de ben ni za da yo je ku gu na ba te da te ni sha le ta ne da jin be yin sa be ni sa da ba che ba.
This can be done in the this giving of happiness can be done in the form of imagining light going out from oneself, or as Shantideva says in the chapter on dedication, one can imagine that this goes out to other beings in the form of whatever they want. If it's a person that wants a lamp, it's in the form of a lamp. If it's a person needs clothing, it's in the form of clothing, food, shelter, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That thing is tonglin chaya, the garo khomni yundu.
When one gradually develops familiarity with this imagination and meditation, one can, when one's made some practice, do it in connection with the breath. Imagining when you inhale the breath that you inhale others' suffering and the causes of suffering, and that when you exhale, you exhale your own happiness and causes of happiness. Now at this point, this is just imagination. But then if you wonder, is there actually a possibility of doing this? In fact, then as earlier explained, when speaking...
No. Under the imagination, if
one wonders whether it is actually possible to bring about others' welfare, or what one is doing right now is just imagination, then one may wonder, is it possible actually to bring about others' welfare? Then, as explained earlier, at the point of developing an aspiration to one's own Buddhahood, it is possible. Then at this point, one generates a special resolve or unusual attitude in which one takes upon oneself the burden of bringing about others' welfare and the relieving of suffering from them. One develops here a fantastic, unusual, altruistic attitude in which one is willing to take upon the burden of freeing all sentient beings from suffering and joining all sentient beings with happiness, taking this upon oneself alone. Then through developing this unusual altruistic attitude in great force, this unusual altruistic attitude induces an intention to become enlightened, which is the actual altruistic mind generation. One does this because, as Buddha said, the Buddhas do not clear away the ill deeds of sentient beings, do not cleanse the ill deeds of sentient beings with water, nor relieve the sufferings of sentient beings through touching them with their hands. Rather, And the Buddhas do not transfer their realization to others. The sentient beings are liberated through being
taught.
Sentient beings relieve themselves from cyclic existence through being taught the truth, reality. Thus, it's necessary to teach others, and as it is said, if the if the doctrines that one needs to teach others are obscure to oneself, one cannot possibly teach the others what they need. For instance, if one brings notes to a lecture and one loses the notes, then one gets all confused. Thus, the topics, the meanings that are going to be taught to the meanings that are to be explained to others can't be meanings that are obscure to oneself. And then, not only that, what's taught to others must be something that's going to help others, be of assistance to them. Thus, one also needs to know the interests, dispositions, and so forth of other beings. Thus, that which prevents one from knowing in fine detail what needs to be taught to others, and that which prevents one from knowing others' interests and dispositions in subtle detail, is the obstructions to omniscience. Thus, the bodhisattvas identify as their real enemy their own obstructions to omniscience. Thus, without overcoming the obstructions to omniscience, there is no way to bring about such vast help. It's not sufficient just to overcome the afflictive obstructions to liberation from cyclic existence. Nevertheless, in order to overcome the predispositions that are established in the mind by the afflictive obstructions, it's necessary to overcome those afflictive obstructions themselves first. Thus, this establishes the procedure of the path of first overcoming the afflictive obstructions and then overcoming the obstructions to
omniscience.
Then the second moment, which is a state of being devoid of the obstructions to omniscience, is the state of the omniscient consciousness of a Buddha. Therefore, it is through this type of thought that one generates an attitude of feeling or thinking that there is no way, that there is no other way for oneself but to overcome the obstructions to omniscience and become a Buddha. This mind, this attitude, is called the altruistic mind of enlightenment. The measure of generating such an altruistic intention to become enlightened is not explicitly set forth in this text. However, one can use the explanation of the measure of generating the determination to leave cyclic existence that was given earlier as a model for understanding how this is to be applied to the mind of enlightenment.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the explanation of how to cultivate the altruistic intention to become enlightened.
Yeah, yeah. That the community is a lot of doubting it.
When one cultivates this in meditation, it's something that's to be cultivated months and months, over years and years, and even over lifetimes and lifetimes. However, it's definitely the case that as this is gradually cultivated, the mind gradually is transformed. When one generates even a portion, even a slight portion of this altruistic attitude, one establishes a cause that will bring about permanent happiness in the future. Even in this lifetime, one's strength of mind, one's will increase, and one's peace of mind will increase. Therefore, it's something that helps not only that helps both temporarily and in the long run.
So you see, really, it's worthwhile to make try, to make attempt. Really. Then is the third point.
Then the third is the correct view of emptiness. Then the next stanza sets forth the purpose for generating the mind realizing emptiness. It says, if you do not have the wisdom realizing the way things are, even though you have developed the thought definitely to leave cyclic existence and the altruistic intention, the root of cyclic existence cannot be cut. So tomorrow I'll be explaining about the view of emptiness. And tomorrow I'll be offering the right of promising the altruistic intention to become enlightened. And then in the afternoon tomorrow, there will be the preparation for the initiation. And the final day, in both the morning and afternoon sessions, there will be the initiation.
Oh, yeah. Question, I think 5 minutes. Try.